are they going to use interstate right away? I don't know. Going north, are they going to use I-5 going up the San Joaquin Valley, or are they going to go over in 101? I don't know.
Getting over the San Gabriel's is probably.
Yeah,
I'm glad you passed it on.
Yeah, that would be really something.
Yeah, that was a very powerful presentation.
Did they have video of
Yeah, he had a lot of good, he had video from China.
Yeah.
In China, they're running up to 300 miles an hour with maglev.
Oh, yeah.
Good, how are you?
Yeah, that was... Mayor, one interesting discussion is going to a different funding mechanism and getting away from gas tax. Of course, there was several discussions on going for vehicle mile traveled. And then it was interesting, I haven't digested it fully, but there's an editorial in today's appeal from the Sage Commission, which apparently is against it, or at least somewhat negative.
I think it's the editorial board of the paper.
I hadn't read that fully to catch what it was.
I think Sage suggested a lot of mile travel.
Yeah.
Oh, and because Sage suggested a ton mile tax. Is that what the?
A vehicle mile tax.
Just vehicle mile. Yeah. And then of course you got the whole business of Big Brother. You know, a lot of these other issues that are coming out. I mean, my feeling is, Big Brother's here. Why worry about it?
We are Big Brother.
Yeah. So, anyway.
That's not a justification for eroding our rights.
Okay.
You look so serious and sober over there.
Well, we're over here talking. We're going to get blast from the legislature on the windmill ordinance.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. What the heck? You must be doing something right.
Yeah, you got their attention.
Where did my agenda
or at least
disappear
one guy.
Oh, here it is.
Right here.
No, I meant minutes. Minutes, not agenda. Minutes.
Ready to go? I don't want to alert everybody. I guess last time I had to raise out of their seat.
Okay.
I'd like to call the meeting of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Furthermore, this is Wednesday, April 8, 2009. It's a little past 5:32, according to my watch. We're at the Community Center Sierra Room at 851 East Williams Street, Carson City, Nevada. The Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization is pleased to make reasonable accommodations for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend this meeting. It's normally held, again, the second Wednesday of every month at 5:30 p.m. in this location. Occasionally, we do have special meetings to look at, which are also important for timing purposes. So if you do wish to attend, please notify the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization staff in writing at 3505 Buddeye Way in Carson City, or email our transportation manager, Patrick Pittenger. Again, his email address is on the CAMPO website, and I would ask if you do have additional information to look at the CAMPO website, which is www.carsonareampo.com. So with that, I'd like to go to the agenda, item A, roll call and determination of a quorum. Kathleen?
Chairperson Desjardins.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Eswine.
Here.
Member Aldine.
Here.
Member Carpenter.
Here.
Member Kroll.
Here.
Member Fultz.
Here.
Member Mallory.
Here.
And ex officio Member Taylor.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Okay, thank you. We have a quorum. Next item B, approval of minutes from our March 11, 2009 meeting. I have just a couple minor things. I think we had mentioned this previously to after Mr. Taylor's name to add an ex officio member. In fact, I think that gives him a lot more power and authority with that, because again, it indicates a man of knowledge and current information, which is useful to us and useful to the public. Also on page two down at the bottom should be 120 day clock. I provided that to Kathleen, and I think that's all I gave you, was it not? We talked about one sentence. Okay. Any others have any changes or comments to the agenda? Okay, can I have a motion to approve the agenda of, or I mean the minutes, excuse me, of March 11th?
So moved.
Have a second. Second from Mr. Carpenter. All of, in favor of approving the minutes of March 11th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. Next is agenda item C, modification of agenda. This is a the agenda that you have available is considered tentative until we hear whether there's any need from the public and or staff to change the agenda items that are listed before us. Patrick, do we have any changes that you want to make to the?
No, not from staff.
Okay, and how about out in the audience? Is there anyone that's on a tight time schedule that would like to move an agenda item of their interest forward? Okay, so we will consider the agenda before us as approved and in the order presented. Agenda item D, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Metropolitan Planning Organization may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the MPO, but not on items agendized for this meeting. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future MPO meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Do we have anybody from the public that wishes to speak? Okay, no one wishes to speak. We will, again, consider the agenda as presented. Okay, item E, disclosures. Any member of the Metropolitan Planning Organization that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the MPO. Do we have any disclosures? Anyone? Okay, one very brief thing, and I know we want to move this along. Several members of staff, Mr. Pittenger, Mr. Denges, thinking, and myself, attended the Nevada Transportation Conference held yesterday and today in Reno. I should have grabbed a bunch of copies of the agenda to share with you. I've been to a lot of conferences, and I have to say this one was exceptionally well presented. We had great speakers. It was really far-reaching. And I think maybe a couple of the things that were presented there, maybe we ought to include on our website that I think are real important. I think Mr. Pisano's presentation given right after lunch today, I think, was exceptional. There's a couple others. The Maglev presentation really tweaked my interest. And perhaps maybe we need to look at and just provide some connection to several of, I think, the very important papers that were given during these 2 days. So anyway, I think it was very useful to me, and I know it was to staff. Okay, thank you. Next, we'll go on to item F, public meeting items. Our first one, F1, information regarding the proposed Campo fiscal year 2010 Unified Planning Work Program, commonly known as the UPWP. And I think, Dan, you're up.
Thank you. Good evening. As many of you know, now's the time of year where Campo looks at their budget and attempts to forecast what we plan to do in the next fiscal year. And I have attached a draft copy of the Unified Planning Work Program. And just to go over a couple brief highlights, many of the tasks are the same as the previous years. And of course, a lot of those include more administrative type actions. One thing I do want to point out is that we plan on updating the regional transportation plan. We want to reflect the current base year in our model. Right now, we're going off a 2005 network in the previous update. It's not to say we're going to be throwing out the old plan. We're happy with the way it turned out, and a lot of the policies and goals, and we don't really want to touch those. But as well as updating the current, the base year, we also want to update the horizon year as well. And one of the reasons for doing this would be to account for some major projects, such as the opening of the freeway to Fairview. We're hoping to get some traffic counts once the freeway has been open for a little while. And right now, we're kind of shooting estimated time frame maybe in September of this year. One of the reasons, too, we wanted to go at least in September is the schools will be open again. So we want to try to capture some of the normal traffic patterns that really, go throughout the year. And also, depending on where we get with the proposed Campo boundary expansion, we would certainly need to update our model to include any projects that might not currently be within the existing boundaries. The total budget that we have for fiscal year 2010 is $330,000, and $24,480 of that is in local match, which would be divided proportionally among the three member agencies. And I should note that an additional $6,000, which is not shown in this budget, in this table, but it is shown in our TIP, would be the local portion for responsibilities as the grantee to for the FTA funds. And the proportions may change again depending on, the outcome of the Campo boundary expansion. Assuming that there will be the inclusion of the Dayton Valley area of Lyon County, that population balance will readjust the proportion. We don't really see, in terms of dollars, anything major happening. Ultimately, what would happen is Lyon County's share would go up a little bit, and Carson City and Douglas County share would actually go down. We opened a public comment period that was noticed this past Sunday, April 5th, for the UPWP. In the interest of time, we want to get this moving forward before our funding is complete for this year. And we will also be having a public informational meeting in this building, in the Bonanza Room, on April 21st, which is a Tuesday, from 4 to 6 p.m. And once the comment period ends, we'll be bringing it back to Campo at the next meeting for approval. And assuming approval at that point, we would then forward on to NDOT, and ultimately they would turn it into FHWA for their final approval.
Dan, on the chart, I guess on page 12, you have a note indicating consultant involvement is expected on a couple tasks. Now, is the consultant work included within the funds that you have listed there?
Yes.
Okay. Also, I'm a little bit confused by the chart on the next page. I don't know, could you just explain this a little bit? Maybe you can explain it a little bit. I'm sure I can grasp it a little better. I tried to make sense out of it, but...
The table is showing the funding breakdown for the tasks?
Fiscal summary of for other governmental funds. It's the chart next on the next page, right?
I'm sorry.
It's
gotcha.
Unpaged.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. The proposed budget is. I should have wrote down all my calculations when I brought it with me here. Okay. We're looking at $342,000 is the total for revenues, and that includes the $12,000 that I previously mentioned that would be in the tip for responsibilities as a grantee. And now half of that, because that's a 50-50 match, half of that would be, Campbell's responsibility in the local share. So if you add the $12,000 with the $330,000, that's where you get the $342,000 there. Okay. And then the intergovernmental is basically the federal share plus the let me see if I'm adding this up right. Yeah, it'd be the other member counties as well, and that would be the share in. And then the 26,000. I'm sorry. Can you help me with it? Carson, that's Carson City's. Okay, that's Carson City's portion.
Keith, do you want to come forward and I suspect that's your chart, so maybe you can explain it.
I can. I'm the financial guy, so I can help it. Keith Pearson, Transit Coordinator, Carson City Public Works. The intergovernmental portion of $315,940 is a transfer of funds from Lyon County, Douglas County, the FHWA, and the FTA. The operating transfers in for $26,000 is Carson City's local portion of it. And the total expenditures expected from Campo is $342,000.
Okay, thank you. Now, it makes some degree of sense to me. Any other members have questions on especially these last two charts? Okay. Dan, you want to go ahead, and you've got a couple more budget preparation worksheets. I think those are fairly clear to me anyway, especially now that last one was explained.
Yeah, actually, this is kind of just supporting what's in the table, the summary table in the front there. As Keith explained, you have the intergovernmental is included. You see where you get the 315,940, which is the combination of the federal and also the local government. And then the 26,000 would be the Carson City share. And then when you total it up, you get the $342,000. And that just basically breaks down by each county and what's between federal highways and FTA.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, any members have any questions? If not, I'll ask whether anybody in the audience has any questions on this particular item. Again, this is an information-only item. We're not taking action on this item. Okay, with that, let's go ahead and move on to item F2, which is information regarding a proposed amendment to the Transportation Improvement Program, commonly known as the TIP. Again, this is a information-only item. And Dan, I think you're up on this one again.
I'm going to take this one.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Patrick.
This is an informational item only. We are still in the 30-day federally required public comment period, but just as an update, so the committee could be informed. We've attached two tables that, as you've seen, if you looked at it, show the division of funding in the state. There were no funds directly allocated by the State Transportation Board on March 12th to any of the entities within the Campo area. But I will point out that there is a $7 million line item towards the bottom of the last page in this packet that is indicated as the Nevada Association of Counties League of Cities projects. So right now those entities are evaluating their options to give input to the Nevada Department of Transportation. There still is a possibility for funding through that, but we do not expect that list to be final by the time we need to close this TIP amendment. So if any funding does come to the Campo area through that, we will have to do a separate TIP amendment. We need to make sure we finish this one so that the other FTA stimulus funds can be expended. And the only other project to add is the $3 million in enhancement money from the stimulus package that has been listed by NDOT for the V&T Railroad. And we'll come back for action at a subsequent meeting.
Okay, thank you. Member Taylor, who's really up on this, I'm sure. Do you have anything to add to what Patrick presented?
I don't, Mr. Chairman. Interestingly enough, we did have a meeting, or I did rather this morning, with our Intermodal Planning Division, who is consolidating the transit lists of transit projects, the 5309, 5311, et cetera, et cetera. They obviously have their processes. They have to follow through the Advisory Committee on Transit and public comment period and stuff of that nature at STAC as well. Once that has been finalized, then we will, as Patrick indicated, amend those transit projects into the STIP document, which was a statewide plan. The list that Patrick referred to with the Nevada Association of Counties and the Nevada League of Cities, that list has been given to NACO. They have reviewed the list. They have been, I'm sure, contacting the rural counties, which Patrick is considered rural as opposed to a full-blown TMA like Las Vegas and Washoe. And we expect to have a prioritized list from NACO for that $7 million within, I'm hoping, within the next week or so. And then that list will go forward to the director for final approval. And again, we will make the necessary accommodations to make sure that those projects are then listed in the plan as well.
Dennis, I have a question for you. How do you know how NACO or the League of Cities, how they are prioritizing these projects?
I do. We had a list, a rather large list, if you will. Patrick's list was included. Douglas County gave us a list. Various entities gave us lists. As in addition thereto, we also had enhancement projects for some of that enhancement money, that $6 million that we have allocated to us. And then there is an additional, and then there's $11 million. Seven of that is for the SDP areas. Well, shouldn't say that. Some of that money, that $11 million, is for STP areas less than 5,000, so Carson City does not qualify. What my folks did, my staff, we consolidated that list, broke down by county, and then we call Mr. and Shelley that all of the projects for ERA money, Recovery Act money, have got to be shovel-ready. So we ran those through our various divisions throughout NDOT to make sure there's no environmental constraints to those projects going forward, utility or right-of-way constraints, and then we then highlighted those for the purpose of NACO. Now, in some cases, in some of the county's projects, we might have had seven projects, but actually only one was shovel-ready. So I'm guessing, and this is my gut feel, I'm thinking we probably have more money than we had projects at this point. No guarantee, but that's what I'm thinking. We had several pages of projects, but there weren't a whole lot that were actually shovel-ready.
Any other Member Kroll?
Yeah, just a follow-up. Were our projects for Carson City shovel-ready, Patrick?
Yes, and Mr. Taylor can comment on this, but the list that Mr. Taylor is referring to, I've identified if there were any problems concerning right-of-way or environmental, and I believe all of our projects were indicated as being was being okay to proceed.
I believe, in fact, you did get a letter from us stating that. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
We had one that we had to withdraw, right?
No. There was one project that was it was only micropaving, and the Federal Highway Administration has ruled that micropaving was more of a maintenance activity, and that one project out of 10 was disqualified.
And not to prejudge what's happening here with NACO or the League of Cities or anything, what was the dollar amount that we submitted?
Well, our original list was just over $9 million, and if you remove the approximately $1 million for the micro paving, it's right about $8 million.
From Carson City?
Yes, just from Carson City.
Thank you.
Patrick, would it be possible you could share the letter that you received from NDOT with our members?
Yes, certainly. It lists everyone in the state and where they stand.
Yeah, I think that would be useful information. Okay. Anyone else have any questions, any members? Okay, if not, again, this is a information item. Anybody in the audience have a question of either Patrick or Mr. Taylor on this particular item? No one? Okay, we'll move on. Next, this is an action item. This is item F3. You're following on your agenda. This is an action to amend the Campbell policy on public comment process for proposed fare and service changes. And again, I think Patrick, you're up on this one.
Yes, we won't review this in detail because it was already brought before this body at the last meeting. At the time, staff was asked to make some changes, including some consistency in terminology and to make the document applicable to service changes, not just negative changes, but also to positive changes. Staff has made changes to this document that are primarily found in section 4 on the second page. We've had a chance to review those, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay.
Member Aldine?
Thank you. Patrick, I'm assuming that even if it's not a significant increase in a fee and it's not a significant decrease in service, you'll still be bringing changes before this board, just informationally, right, so that we can keep the public apprised of changes that are occurring?
Yes, we wouldn't make any expansion of service changes or fare changes without bringing it first before. Actually, it would have to come before the governing, as we say here, the governing body of the transit operator. So in the case of Carson City, Carson City staff would need to come before the Carson City RTC and appraise them of the changes.
Right. Given that, my only concern is under policy, the new policy language, it says this policy applies to any fare increase or decrease and a service increase or major service reduction. If it's not your intent to hold public meetings to apprise the public of significant changes in the fee structure or in a significant reduction in service, then perhaps we should remove the word any. I don't want it to be construed to mean that any change, regardless of how insignificant, is going to have to go through this public vetting process. Do you see where I'm referring under policy?
Yeah, I see policy number one right there. Well, the intent of this is certainly that if there's any, that we try to build thresholds that would trigger the conduct. For example, if one bus stop were eliminated, if you look at number one, part C, if one bus stop were eliminated because there was a safety hazard, for example, that would not, if we removed one pole, that would not trigger this process. So we tried to build those thresholds.
For the sake of clarity, I think probably any should be removed. You just say this policy applies to fare increases and decreases, and then you define what constitutes a major reduction in service or a significant increase in fees. I just don't want to burden you with having somebody interpret this literally and want every insignificant change to be brought before the public in a public forum.
We're certainly open to any change.
Okay, does anyone else have a comment? Member Fultz?
Free rides on election day or New Year's Eve or something? Does it have to go through this process, or can you put an exception in there, or do we even need to worry about it?
I believe that would be appropriate just to cover our bases, to say that, for an indefinite period of time, any fare decrease or increase for an indefinite period of time, so that, like you said, when we do it for one day, it doesn't doesn't require this whole process.
Thanks.
Okay, along that line then, does that mean we should have some additional wording added to what we have presented for us? I definitely concur with Member Aldean about removing the word any, because I think, are you suggesting maybe adding some additional language to cover? Because I think what you have...
perhaps an exclusion for special event or something, or maybe Patrick thinks it's not necessary because it wouldn't be major. I'm not sure.
I think that's entirely appropriate.
I do, too. I think it is. Okay. Patrick, would maybe, again, are we on a time constraint on this?
No, not particularly.
Maybe add that and,
that's
you know, just look it over, spend a little time, look it over, and then bring it back to us next month. Is that all right?
That's or perfectly fine.
We could even include this in our special meeting and pass on it quickly. Okay. Anybody else have any comments?
Okay.
Member Eschwein?
Patrick, I don't see anything in here, and getting back to what Shelley said was, there's no threshold for when you would consider, when you would have to bring a fair increase before the board.
Well, and that is because of, I used the word any there, which we're going to strike, but because I believe that even if it's a 3% fair increase or 10% fair increase, we would still need to go through this process. I think any fair increase is can be seen as negative by the riders and affect ridership, and the intent is that regardless of the level of fare increase, it would need to go through this process.
Okay. Member Carpenter, I believe, or is it?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The I was tickled to see that you were going to transmit to appropriate media outlets to encourage media coverage on the fare decreases or major service increases. I just wanted clarification that when that's proposed by a transit operator, the transit operator would be us. Is that who the transit operator is?
Well, yes. In the case of Carson City, it would be Carson City RTC. In the case of Douglas County, it would be DART.
It would be
DART.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And
thank you.
And their responsibility.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. We've had some input. I think my feeling is on this, before I ask for public comment, is perhaps, unless members object, is have Patrick bring this back to us at another meeting. And I don't think we're not under time constraint here, are we?
No, we're not.
Okay. Let's do that. And so we'll hold off on a vote, and we'll just bring it back next month. But in the meantime, this is also open to the public. If anyone in the public has any comments on this somewhat legal document that we have been discussing here, it's important that we get it right. And so does anyone out in the audience have any concern or comment? Or if you want to look at it, you can get a copy from Patrick or Dan or Keith and study it and provide some input to us. Okay, no one? Okay, so with that, we'll suspend voting on F3, and we'll move on to F4, which is also an action item. And this is an action to approve the application to the Nevada Department of Transportation for Federal Transit Administration 5316 funds for federal fiscal year 2010. And let's see, who's up on this one? Keith, I think you have this one. Oh, you're already there. Okay, Keith.
Thank you, sir. Keith Pearson, Transit Coordinator, Carson City Public Works. As you said, this is an application for 5316 funds for federal fiscal year 2010. These funds are used for job access reverse commute. Carson City, Jack specifically, has an interlocal agreement with STATA, South Tahoe. And we provide service between Carson City and Lake Tahoe. These funds would help fund that service and would alleviate Carson City RTC from having to use 5307 funds to do so. If you guys have any specific questions, I will be more than happy to entertain them. Otherwise, I move to approve the application to the Nevada Department of Transportation for Federal Transit Administration 5316 funds for federal fiscal year 2010.
Member Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is that the fiscal impact here is not yet known. And so by approving the application for these funds, are we committing ourselves to such? And if so, how much is CAMPO going to need to come up with?
CAMPO will come up with nothing, as the interlocal agreement that the funds are specified for is between Carson City RTC and STATA.
Okay, thank you.
Member Aldean?
No,
Member Mallory, sorry.
Keith, I've got a quick question for you. What planning processes are in place right now to look at transit service from Incline to Carson City? Because this actually goes to South Shore.
Actually, I'm not aware of any planning.
I'm not aware of any either.
What's the demand?
From Incline?
Between Incline and Carson City.
Unless Keith is aware of any, I have not received any requests specifically for that, nor has any been transmitted to us by Blue Go staff, STATA staff.
No, there hasn't, but I did pose the question to Mr. John Ando when we did get into this agreement, would there be feasibility to connect Incline to this route, whether through Blue Go service or as an addition to this, and he said it was desired to do so.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any other members have questions on this item? Member Taylor, I noticed you reached for no. Okay. I was watching your arm. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. With that, just hang on. Anybody in the public have any comments on this item, this agenda item F4? Okay, with that, let's see, I guess I need a motion to pass or not pass this particular item.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the application to the Nevada Department of Transportation for Federal Transit Administration 5316 funds for federal fiscal year 2010.
Okay, I have a second from Member Aldean. All those in favor of approving item F4, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have any opposed? None? Okay, item F4 is passed unanimously. Okay, let's next move down to item G1. Again, this is an information item, and as we know, Lyon County came forward with a letter suggesting at least look at increasing the Lyon County boundary within CAMPO. And as I indicated as chairman, I would move on this action very quickly, and I did. I got together with our transportation manager, Mr. Pittenger, and we came forward with a letter very quickly, and it's, I'm looking for my item here. It's included in our agenda item, and I guess then the next question I have, Patrick, I haven't had a chance to ask you, whether have we taken the next step in starting communication with Lyon County? Okay.
I can answer that question. Yes, we have. We have received some communication from Dan, which included a list of requirements from NDOT. We have begun to put together that information. Unfortunately, our GIS person was out for 2 weeks from an automobile accident, so we were not able to get it quite as timely as we had hoped, but it is in process as we speak.
Okay. That's great. It's moving along, and so we'll just kind of consider this maybe as an update item as we go along, because I'm sure the citizens in Lyon County are very interested in this item.
So I'd like to thank the chairman for his prompt action on this. Good move.
Thank you, Mayor Curl. Okay, I think with that, that's the next is item G2, future agenda items. Do we have any agenda items? I think we have a couple carryover from this meeting. Anyone have any other items? Maybe an update on stimulus? Member Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's one of the things I was going to recommend as an update. And also as an administrative matter, sir, there is no misunderstanding. When I made the comment earlier that my gut feelers there's more money than projects, I was taking into consideration the sub-allocation of the $6 million in enhancement and the $11 million in SDP areas less than 5,000, which can only specifically be used for enhancement projects and in those SDP areas less than 5,000. So I don't want anybody to think we're rolling in a dough, because $201 million statewide is not a whole lot of money.
That's right. It doesn't go very far. Okay, good. Anyone else have any additional agenda items? Patrick?
If I may, as was communicated earlier this week through directly to the members and will be publicly noticed per NRS requirements, there will be a fairly unusual special meeting of the CAMPO board on Friday, April 24th, immediately following a special meeting of the Carson City RTC, which is scheduled for noon on that same date. It will be held in this room, same conditions. And the reason for that meeting is twofold. The primary one is to complete the amendment of the Transportation Improvement Program, because until that amendment is complete, we cannot spend, nobody in the urban area can spend the stimulus funds and the transit and enhancement funds we do relatively have in hand. So we want to make sure we get that adopted as soon as possible. Thank you.
Okay, Member Aldean.
Patrick, have those advisory notices been posted? Have they gone out? My only recommendation is typically we hold a meeting of CAMPO prior to the meeting of RTC, because we don't want to necessarily inconvenience our CAMPO members and have them sit through an RTC meeting, however short and abbreviated it might be. So do you want to reverse the order of those meetings?
Member Aldean, we did. Patrick and I talked about this, whether we could even fit it in with it in this hour thing, but I think your comment is very appropriate.
But as we discussed, and the only reason that they're in this order is that we found the need to hold the RTC prior to the necessity of the CAMPO meeting coming first, and we've already noticed the RTC meeting as being at noon. We only have the room for an hour, so they will be brief meetings.
Okay, any other suggested agenda items? Okay, with that, I think we're about through. If I could have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay, meeting adjourned.
So, Patrick, you going to be buying lunch that day?
And RTC, the RTC meeting will convene here in just a couple minutes when we play musical chairs to get our members in the right positions.
See you later.
See ya.
Okay.
Yeah, this is great.
We're going to have all our meetings now.
That's right.
We'll move down one. Excellent meeting, Charles.
Yes.
John.
Yeah. Expedited meetings.
Oh, let's see. I think who I said in this one.
Well, you know, we're a little.
I thought
Russ is there. Do
Russ
I sit
had us all set. Had us all lined up. I think you go. Just move over one.
Put me,
just move over one.
Oh, okay.
I'll go over next to Shelly.
All right. Ross, you're going to move me over here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Game on.
No. You should have changed channels.
No.
Actually, the other two committees that were being at this, you know, meeting at the same time were really boring. So this is the only one that was any, of any interest. So looking at him, and he was talking about the wind turbines and solar power and such. And then he read some news release or something saying that the mean people in Carson City, namely you and your friends, asked the ordinance or maintain the ordinance to keep a $2,000 something fee on.
Just deferred action on the revised ordinance, which means that what's currently, the current requirement is that you get a special use permit. That's currently the case. People can still apply under the existing ordinance. We just delayed adopting the revision.
You shouldn't have delayed it. He said that. He says, I'm going to look up
Carson. Shelly or just me?
No, just you. He says he's going to look up the mayor. He's going to look up the mayor and talk to him about that.
Share that philosophy or not.
He was quoting some resident.
Oh, yeah, there's one gentleman
in
Mr.
Lakeview
Howard.
That says that his apparently his rights extend to as far as he can see or something. And
it was probably mine, actually. As usual.
So, as Snyder is pretty sedate normally, and he was, for him, he was.
Maybe I'm good for you.
I gotta go to dinner with him.
Is
he in Las Vegas?
Who's that?
Oh yeah, he's at Las Vegas Center.
I mean, it's
yeah, Las Vegas.
Pretty good.
Yeah, we've got one.
So. I'd be happy to. Okay, Patrick, are we ready? How's your wife offline? She's doing okay? Good. Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're right, eh?
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to bring this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission to order. The date is Wednesday, April 8th, 2009. We're in the Sierra Room at the Community Center. And Kathy, will you please take the roll to determine a quorum?
Chairperson Aldean.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Carpenter.
Present.
Commissioner Cole.
Here.
Commissioner Desjardins.
Here.
Commissioner Mallory.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you. Moving on to item B, approval of minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes of March 11, 2009? And are there any suggested changes, corrections, or deletions?
If you're ready for motion, I move to approve.
We have a motion to approve.
Second.
All right. And an enthusiastic 2 seconds.
We've got 2 seconds.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. Next item, modifications to the agenda. Patrick?
Staff.
All right, thank you. Moving on to item D, public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the commission may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the commission, but not on items agendized for this meeting. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please see me after the meeting so that we can make arrangements to place it on an agenda at a future meeting. Are there any public comments on any non-agendized items? All right, seeing none, we'll close public comment and move on to item E, disclosures. Does any member of the commission wish to disclose a contact with the public?
I'm not going to talk about Senator Snyder.
Okay. As it relates to RTC, not as it relates to wind turbines. Okay. All right. No disclosures. We'll move on to the next item, the consent agenda, item F. We have three items on the consent calendar, and I would like to pull item F1. Does any other member of the commission or member of the public wish to pull an item off the consent agenda? All right.
F3.
F3. All right. Leaves us with F2. Do I hear F2? Going once, going twice. Okay. Would somebody care to make a motion to approve our very abbreviated consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Okay. If you don't mind, I'll go first since
please.
I'm in chronological proper numerical order. Item F1. I had a conversation earlier today with Patrick and Joel, our counsel, by email regarding this item. I had suggested that we amend the language in the contract. I'm a little bit paranoid, I guess, when it comes to clarity, and I was a little bit concerned. I didn't want to do anything. If you look at page 2 of 5, which is the amendment, number 5, to the contract with MV Transit, you'll note that under the concluding paragraph, it says that all unaffected conditions, requirements, and restrictions of the original contract document and the other amendments that are not in conflict with this amendment remain in full force and effect. What we are amending, basically, is the previous amendment. I was concerned that the language that says that, in other words, that the current amendment before us will basically trump language that's in conflict with this amendment in the original agreement. Well, one of the provisions is a non-appropriation provision, which says if we don't have the money, we can't fund the contract. So in my mind, that conflicts, actually, with this amendment, since we are increasing by a modest amount the amount of the contract. So what I would like to suggest, and I know it's not a big deal, Joel wasn't really overly concerned by this, but he had no objection to my proposed amendment, which would be to bracket the words and the other amendments that are not in conflict with this amendment. So we're confining the effect of this language to amendments that are in conflict with previous amendments that have been adopted by this board. So that's the only suggested change I have. Oh, there actually is another change, just a clerical change on page 1. Now, therefore, in consideration of the aforementioned promises instead of premises. And that's the only other correction.
No, I guess I'm it's late in the day. I'm having some confusion. So the amendment is going to apply to everything that's in conflict or not in conflict?
No, the amendment would read, it is also agreed that all unaffected conditions, requirements, and restrictions of the original contract document, in parentheses, and the other amendments that are not in conflict with this amendment, remain in full force and effect for the duration of the contract term.
I'm sorry, so that language stays in, it just within parentheses.
Right.
I got you. Okay, I'm fine with that. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, any other comments from members of the commission on this item? Any comments from members of the public? Would somebody care to make a motion? Russ.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion. I move to approve amendment number 5, contract number 0506-035. Carson City Community Transit Service Operations to MV Transportation, Inc., to be funded from operating contract 225-3206-430-0331 as provided in FY2009/2010 as amended and corrected.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. Moving on now to item F3. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On item F3, as we pour through this, as far as the fiscal impact, it says negligible. I have no idea how much negligible is.
There are no costs involved with the actual agreement, but there are costs that you've already approved in the Curry Street project related to drainage. So the cost for us acquiring the easements is zero.
Okay.
But there are costs that we already have an agreement with Michael Hull in order to provide the improvements as part of the Curry Street project. So related to this part of the project, there are no costs.
Good. Thank you.
Can I open Pandora's box? Originally, it said none, and I thought, wait a minute, you know, we might have some recording costs here. How can it be none? And right. So then we agreed on negligible.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So.
I think the public should know that we have probably one of the premier people who watches these things right here. I mean, and you know what? It's not. This is meant as a genuine compliment. I mean, it is just great to have this kind of level of review.
It's thoroughly obnoxious, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. Is there a motion to approve item F3?
Well, that's a long one.
Okay.
I'll open it to public comment. First of all, is there any public comment on item F3? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Charles?
Okay. I move to approve and authorize the chair to sign an agreement between Theo Properties, LLC, and Carson City, whereby Theo Properties, LLC, agrees to, one, convey a drainage easement on a portion of certain real property described as assessor's parcel number 009-111-21 for the purpose of roadway construction related to the widening of South Curry Street. Item two, grant permission to construct upon, over and across certain real property described as assessor's parcel number 009-111-21 and 009-111-27 for the purpose of roadway construction related to the widening of South Curry Street, and the fiscal impact is negligible.
Thank you, Charles. Is there a second?
I second that. Excuse me.
Hear it out loud, it sounds rather silly, but that's okay. That's all right. It conveys the message.
It's good.
That is not significant. Okay. Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. All right. Moving on to our next agenda item. Yes. Okay. Public meeting items. G1, presentation and discussion regarding ongoing engineering work for phase two. I'm sorry. F2 has already been passed. It's part of the
passed.
Consent calendar.
We approved it.
It was a consent.
We did.
It was the one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Back to G1. Presentation and discussion regarding the ongoing engineering work for phase two of the Roop Street widening project.
The Carson RTC had previously awarded the contract to Manhard to finish the engineering work for the Roop Street widening project. Representatives from Manhart are here this evening to give us an update on the progress of the design for phase two of the Roop Street widening project.
Chairman Aldean, I'd just like to add, I suggested to the Manhart people that they would probably be up about 6:30, so I think I'm fairly accurate.
Kudos to Commissioner Desjardins. He'll be our official timekeeper from this point forward. Okay, all right.
Okay, a little adjustment. I guess our microphone is either on or off.
Sounds like it's on.
Good evening, Madam Chairperson and members of the board. My name is Ken Dorr. I'm with Manhart Consulting, and the real boss here is Rebecca Bernier, who's putting up our pictures of what we actually got going on with the proposed project at this point, and is also here to let me know if we have a little bit of a foul up, if you will. Let's just go ahead and drop that. What we've done tonight is prepare a little PowerPoint presentation to talk about the Roop Street project in general, going over a little bit of the history of that project. We also have some displays that display a little bit more accurate, a little more detailed information that is not included or a little bit fuzzy in the PowerPoint presentation. In general, the information included in your packet represents the PowerPoint presentation, although we made a couple little upgrades as we went through since that information has been forwarded. The principal reason we're coming forward to the board at this point is this project has been going on since literally 2000. I believe that John Flansburgh instituted a right-of-way study, and the only person that is on this board now that was back on the board when we went through a number of alternative options, looking at different roadway options and section width alternatives, and how we're going to stage the project is Chairperson Aldean, and she probably will remind me of every little thing I forget that I miss on that.
Like your original estimate.
We'll get into that.
Go ahead with the rest of your presentation.
I have a good story for that one, and it's my story, and I'll stick with it. Thank you. Anyway, do you have a... Where's our little mouse? There it is. Without further ado, we're going to go ahead into the PowerPoint presentation, and feel free to stop me at any point in time you want. Presentation contents, again, we just want to give you an overview of Rib Street running all the way from Winnie Lane on up to 5th Street. Total length is about a mile and a half. There's principally three phases in that project, which we'll get into a little bit. A little bit about the project history. I want to talk a little bit about what has been determined to be phases 1, 2, and 3 of the Rib Street widening project. Talk a little bit about some key intersections on phase 2 of the project, and talk a little bit about our current construction cost estimate. That's where Shelley can beat me up pretty good, and what our schedule is for phase 2, and also a little bit about phase 3. Overview of the project, basically of the mile and a half. Phase 1 of the project runs from Winnie down to Beverly. Phase 2 from Beverly down south past Highway 50 William Street to Washington, and then phase 3 essentially from Washington Street down to 5th Street. That is the basic designations. Now, what does that mean? Again, project history on the overall project. Again, the right-of-way study was commenced and completed in 2000 and 2001, and that was to determine how much right-of-way is available on Rube Street, and the answer is not very much. It's essentially there's an existing 66-foot wide right-of-way throughout most of the project. In some cases, it's narrower than that, and in very few cases, was actually wider than that. And so we were constrained with that very narrow right-of-way way off the bat. But during 2000-2001 period, we went through a number of different alternatives, looking at one-way alternatives, various one-way couplets, different configurations using combination of Stewart Street, Rube Street, and again, I think we actually have a report sitting around here someplace, but I know there was at least 6 alternatives. Subsequent to that, we went through a couple of more alternatives when we were looking at the Stewart Street project. 2004, and okay, Shelley, here we go. We actually bid all of what is now termed Phase 1 and Phase 2 of Rube Street. The one thing I will say is in 2004, the costs were escalating. It seemed like from a construction standpoint, it seemed like about 5% per month. And I'm not necessarily proud to say, but that was the worst estimate I've ever had as far as missing that. The bottom line was we bid the project from Winnie Street all the way down south of Washington Street, and the prices came in way too high, and the board elected not to proceed with construction of that entire project. Recognizing, we went through the alternative analysis, recognizing the need for Stewart Street, it was deemed appropriate to go ahead and break out phase 1 of the Rube Street project from Winnie Street down to the Dan David intersection and a little bit further of that, basically to set up the Rube Street improvements so that they would accommodate the future Stewart Street improvements with the concept that if we could get Stewart Street in, we would be making a wonderful detour for the very problematic construction on Rube Street. Of course, we are working on Stewart Street now.
Well, and that was one of the reasons we had such high costs, is because the constructability portion of the Rube Street was really tough, and the traffic control was exceedingly high part of the cost.
Exactly. Rube Street, again, it started out as a street job and ended up being basically a utility, major utility project. Every utility in the world is located in that corridor, And, of course, we ended up adding a whole lot of additional utilities to that also.
Would you mind, as we move along, you can either go through your presentation uninterrupted, or would you mind entertaining questions periodically?
I'm easy. You go ahead and hit me up.
Okay. Well, rather than formally recognizing members of the commission, just go ahead and ask your question whenever it's appropriate.
Well, I just wanted to add on to Andy. As I recall, the biggest problem was the underground or the unknown underground situation, maybe even more so than what Andy was mentioning, as I recall.
You're absolutely correct. The complexity of the utilities, particularly from Highway 50 or William Street north to Beverly, is very problematic. And then we also, because of our tight right-of-way constraints, we literally did not have room to even consider relocating the overhead utilities and overhead means, because we're going to take all of the right-of-way. Again, there is no utility easements on this older portion of town. Take all of that right-of-way for the roadway improvements, and leaving no room for relocation of those overhead utilities. So a key component of the Roop Street project was undergrounding the electric power, cable television, and telephone facilities that run from Highway 50 on up to Beverly. So not only did we have two sewer lines, two water lines, both of which, by the way, are in lousy condition, undersized storm sewer, gas line, which is in some cases was in good shape, some cases was bad shape. We figured that life was too easy. So rather than just replacing all that, we would go ahead and add all these underground utilities for the overhead facilities, and actually had an agreement in place with the various utility companies to do that undergrounding at times. So the utility costs were huge. And again, we only received two bidders on that project now versus right now back in 2004. Prices were probably okay from their standpoint in 2004, but now we're receiving anywhere between 10 to 12 bidders on some of these projects. So we'd hope that we proceed forward, we get some better prices. But you're right, Commissioner DeJardin, utilities were a major concern. All right, not to take up everything. 2009, Stewart Street construction project, and we went through a number of alternative analyses on that. That project is, of course, under construction now to complete Stewart Street, which is a three-lane arterial section running from, three-lane collector section running from William Street on up to Roop Street at the Dan David intersection, of course, going through the church, and I think everybody knows, very familiar with that project right now. Prices on that one came in very, very good.
The advantage of having that project completed now ahead is that it allows us to divert traffic to Stewart Street as a part of the construction of the new Roop Street, which should shave costs rather dramatically for us.
Yeah, and I actually think I have a slide in here, or Rebecca has a slide for me, showing the overall relationship of that project to our entire world here. We're also working on the design update for Phase 2. Again, the Phase 2 design was done and bid. There's a number of changes that had to be made because of some of the utility modifications we had to make to support the Stewart Street project. And there's been a few other design changes here and there, also breaking out the Phase 1 portion of the project. And that's basically where we're at right now.
And we made some more changes by dropping out the reclaimed water line out of the project and
that's
modifying
correct.
Some of the water sewer project.
Roop Street Phase 1, again, is the portion that was completed in 2005, and that was essentially widening the three-lane Roop Street between Winnie and Beverly to effectively a four-lane section. We did the intersection reconstruction at David Street. Again, that will ultimately be a signalized intersection. We'll be signalized with the Stewart Street project. Provided a temporary transition back to Beverly. And that was completed in 2005, and that's the one I think the city issued Macquarie Construction that $17,500 check for completion early, and they donated that to Red Cross. That was pretty cool. Roop Street Phase 2, a couple of components of this project. Again, this runs from Beverly down to Washington. It's about a little over 3,000 feet in length. And this is the heart of the previous project and probably the most complicated portion of Roop Street, and Stewart Street had some challenges in it, but again, this one was the tough one. Charles hit it right on the button there. Effectively, that's going to be widened to five lanes, very narrow lanes for the most part. The center left turn lane is only 10 foot in width. The number one or inside traffic lane is only about 10 and a half feet wide, and the outside lane is only 12 feet. So pretty narrow lanes. The advantage is that with those lanes being narrow, hopefully that will tend to control some of the speed on there. The disadvantage is that 12-foot outside lane is not from Highway 50 north. It probably doesn't really readily accommodate bicycle traffic. Again, that may or may not be a concern, but that portion of Roof Street is not indicated as having bike lane on the master plan. And again, we are literally using every piece of right-of-way. Widening that road any further is going to probably involve some structured demolition. A lot of those buildings, no front yard setbacks when they were built.
Ken, isn't it also true, and maybe it's in the final phase of this project, but I know that I met with a gentleman a number of years ago who, frankly, he built in the city's right-of-way. I don't know how many cases of that we have along this section of roadway, but it will render his driveway useless for the parking of automobiles. So, I mean, this is a complicated project for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is not only the utilities but the encroachment issues that we have to deal with.
You're absolutely correct, Shelley. There is at least one building, and it's a commercial building, on the corner of John Street and Roop Street, which is significantly into the city's, built into the city's right-of-way by whatever error was made. We're not interfering with the building. Obviously, the sidewalk needs to be reconfigured. But because of the proximity of a lot of the buildings, which are in some cases residential, to the roadway, particularly to the new curb and gutter, which is going to move out about 7 feet from where it's at now, there is very little, if any, driveway width. And that's an issue that we dealt with on Stewart Street on each one of those, pretty much a case-by-case basis. Pretty much all of those locations, because as part of this concept is the board is going back in and replacing to the best of we're going to be replacing to the best of our ability the improvements that those property owners have installed in front of their houses, whether or not they're in the right of way. But to make that work, we normally have to get permission to construct documents and permission, which you just approved on the previous item. And then we end up talking to Kim in particular, ends up talking to every one of those property owners. And so we usually end up with a negotiated settlement. And generally speaking, the city, I think, does a wonderful job with the position they're taking. They try to go out of their way to make that people whole, if you will, who have frontage on Roop Street. Even though those improvements are in the city right away, you legally can go in there and tear those out. But that's not the position that we've been taking. So it's very tricky with those driveways and the improvements in general. And some of the trees are also tricky. Widens to 5 lanes, basically a full reconstruction. I mentioned all of the poor condition of the utilities. They are in very, very marginal condition. Sewer and water line, some are on the verge of failing. The other problem with Roop Street is it's been overlaid a number of times. It has a very steep, high, significant crown. It's a really challenge to drive down that roadway. Really, to make this roadway work, with the considering the utilities, the widening, and the cross-sectional challenges, is we have to reconstruct that entire roadway. And plus, if we don't have any control on the new curb and gutter, trying to minimize the impacts to those adjacent properties from a drainage and access standpoint. So the whole road is going to effectively get torn up, with the exception of some of the improvements just north of Highway 50. Again, I already mentioned utilities. The overheading of the undergrounding of the overhead power lines, tricky. Andy and I discussed, can we go ahead and put those back overhead as a cost-saving measure? And the problem was there's no right-of-way. And so where do we put those utilities? We have to, the city's obligated to provide a replacement easement for those utilities, even though there's a franchise agreement, but as part of that franchise agreement, you can't just tell them to just get rid of your facilities. You need to provide them another route to get their facilities in. So the best location was underground, and that's what's included in the project at this point. And plus, it's going to be, I think, pretty spectacular cleaning up that area with getting some of those overhead utilities out of the way. Some more bullet points. I think we're going to go through and take a look at a couple of major intersections, Long John, Williams, and Washington. One change on Washington Street we're proposing from what we did in 2004, but we can talk about that. We're also doing some landscaping improvements. We set up for some landscaping improvements at Winnie and Dan during the phase one portion of the project, and we've been directed to go ahead and put those improvements in there. They're not very extensive. Some landscape boulders and some minor shrubbery, I think. Also, there's a little bit of landscaping and a little vacant sort of a no man's land parcel that the city owns off of Lee Street, and then also at the library. We're looking essentially a temporary transition at Washington Street back to the existing roadway. So there effectively is going to be improvements all the way down to Robinson. The curb and gutter, where none exists now between Washington and Robinson Street on the west side of Roop, is going to be installed, but it's installed at the location that will accommodate the proposed section that was originally discussed to be constructed from Washington all the way down to Fifth Street. So the intent there is hopefully we do not have to mess with that curb once it gets in.
Ken, I wanted to ask you one thing. Again, for I don't know how many times, I bank at the Bank of America, and going north on Roop and making that left turn onto John is a little bit confusing. And I had another person turn who was in the far right lane and just turned right in front of a whole bunch of people, including me. And it was, I don't know how an accident was missed on that. And that's happened a number of times. Realizing this is just hopefully when, you know, we start constructing Roop, we can take care of that problem. But I'm just a little concerned since it's happened several times. And I notice it just seems a problem. I don't know if there's a temporary fix that you folks may suggest to take care of that situation?
Well, we haven't actually looked at a temporary, but this was one of the intersections we discussed at length. As Shelley will probably tell you, this is where we get into the whoop-de-doo layout. And I'm going to go back into that intersection, but we went through this intersection back and forth, and there's it's a challenging intersection. You're absolutely right with that movement, and the intent was to try to eliminate that movement. But let's move forward. We'll be there in just a second. I'll get a slide up here. Again, Stewart Street, when this project does go forward, which obviously is funding constrained, is going to be a really good detour. We joked about at one point in time we thought Stewart Street was going to be a $6 million detour for Roop Street. Well, now it turns out it's a $3.5 million detour for Roop Street. But the bottom line is closing, being able to close down, except for local traffic portions of Roop Street, is going to have a tremendous cost savings and less impact on the traveling public because they are going to have Stewart Street to go with. Again, our overall view of how things sit together, this is basically the phase two of Roop Street running down to William Street, and it actually goes down to Washington. And then here's our detour, if you will. One of the big concerns, and I know I'm talking about this on a slide, is the John Street intersection. The question was, right now, under the current design and the layout that was approved by the board previously, there are no left turns eastbound to northbound allowed out of John Street. The justification we went through before was, well, in the future, there's going to be an alternative roadway called Stewart Street built, and then that traffic, hopefully after a little education, can go ahead and run on up and run up on Stewart Street. So the advantage is now we do actually have a roadway for that alternative movement, but it's still require change in traffic patterns, if you will. Phase three Roop Street is Washington Street to Fifth Street. That is basically widened to four lanes. We are going to look at some key intersections about putting some left turn lanes, because that section involved four previously discussed was. And this isn't included in the immediate construction project or the phase two construction, but would involve four 11-foot lanes and two dedicated bicycle lanes of approximately 5.5-foot width. And those correspond to the bicycle lanes that are included on the pedestrian and bicycle trail uniform pathway. And I didn't get the name of the master plan right, but it's close. And those bicycle lanes terminate at the community center and then run through the community center at Washington Street. Probably full construction on that roadway too. Again, we're in preliminary design, conceptual design on that. anticipate water, sewer, and storm drain improvements, not nearly as extensive as north of Highway 50. And several key intersections going to require some improvements. And again, it's in preliminary design stage. Rube Street Phase 2, again, Long Street, John Street, William Street, and Washington Street intersections. This is a little conceptual blowout, basically showing the new curb and gutter and sidewalk and proposed striping for Long Street, north being off to the right. The east-west legs virtually remain the same on Long Street as they are right now, a three-lane configuration, one traffic lane, and a left turn lane. The north-south lanes, we're adding one traffic lane. To accommodate this proposed configuration, we're having to replace all the curb and gutter sidewalk, put in new radius returns, slightly longer radius than is there now. Most of those radius returns on Rube Street are very sharp. We went down to, it's actually less than the city standard. It was a compromise. If this was going to be a new street, we'd be using 30-foot radius returns. We went down to a 20-foot as a compromise between impact, pedestrian safety, and traffic use. These dark lines are the proposed right-of-way, so there is going to have to be a right-of-way acquired at Long Street to accommodate not just the intersection improvements, but also the signal modifications to accommodate this new layout. Effectively, there'll be a brand new traffic signal at that location. The whoop-de-doo intersection, John Street, Highway 50, and Rube Street. And of course, our current configuration right now, I believe we have one southbound traffic lane. We do still have the right turn lane for allowing vehicles to turn west on Highway 50. And one northbound lane. We're widening that to five lanes, and the proposal is to construct this bulb out in conjunction with this, I guess we'd call this the little whoop-de-doo. The purpose of this configuration at this location, which currently exists, is essentially to provide a protected pocket for this right turn movement and to try to discourage weaving movements from vehicles that are trying to turn right versus vehicles that are turn right onto Highway 50 and vehicles that are trying to either merge and turn left onto Rube Street and go east on Highway 50. So that right turn lane essentially remains in place. It's one of the few areas that doesn't require reconstruction. But we configured this bulb out lane narrowing scenario with the concept of trying to put some type of a center median island in there. With this current layout, would the intent there is there would be a right turn in it into and out of John Street only. Technically, this left turn would be illegal, but I suppose I could probably get over that medium curb with my four-wheel drive, but it would be a illegal movement. So this is the intersection which we discussed at length during the previous meetings way back in 2004, and this was the best compromise, again, with Stewart Street. In place, there is opportunity for vehicles to go north. There's no easy solution on this one. These intersections are very close together, and it's a mess. Back in the old days, RTC used to have a little board that had all the accidents and whatnot, and this whole area had was just full of little pins with accidents from people sideswiping and rear-end accidents, and pretty frustrating. There's a sign right now that says when you're moving south, don't block intersection. If you block the intersection and get someone that's really short-tempered, it can be quite a little challenge there. So this is the configuration of the John Street intersection. Again, right turn out, right turn in only, no left turns in that we would recommend proceeding with.
We did explore the option of cul-de-sacking John Street at Rube, as I recall.
Yes, we did.
And we determined that based on the impact it would have on some of the businesses on John Street, that this was a preferable alternative.
Again, you're absolutely right, Commissioner Aldine. This is a big compromise. Pretty much all these reconstruction projects, they're a compromise between the most modern development standards that the city has and the reality of if you try to implement those development standards, the impact that you have on the adjacent property owners as well as on the operating public. And they're tough decisions to make, but, try to come up with a logical compromise, and this was what we recommended. And again, the alternative there is John Street to the new Stewart Street, and then northbound up to a signalized intersection at that point. So you can get out of there a lot easier than we could have got out of there had we built this portion of Roop Street in 2004. William Street intersection essentially remains the same. We didn't get the striping on the east-west leg. What's that?
It's faint.
Well, it's real faint because I guess there's some striping there. Yeah. Anyway, it is a five-lane configuration. You did good. Don't worry. Five-lane configuration, two traffic lanes in each direction, and a left turn lane, and also on the northbound approach, westbound approach. Again, this intersection, we're adding one southbound lane and one northbound lane north of Highway 50. The right turn exclusive lane that would be the number two lane, if you will, on Roop Street, it would be converted into a right or through combination. So effectively, this curb and gutter in front of the community center doesn't really change. Also indicated in here is because we're getting into the curb and gutter replacements, upgrading the sidewalks to be conformance and new conformance with the new ADAA standards. It's three A's now, I think, as of January 12th, which I think Andy can elaborate on how challenging that has been all the way through town. But basically, anytime we do major street improvements, we have to bring pedestrian ramps and driveways up to the current ADAA standards. That's pretty much happening. Not pretty much. It is happening on every one of these roadways. This is the current design as bid in 2004 of Washington Street and Roop Street. And basically, there's no restrictions on this intersection. It's effectively the same layout as would be in place right now, with the exception, just to make it really more challenging, we're actually adding one more traffic lane, north-south traffic lane. So anybody wanting to come across Washington Street to go to the community center or vice versa or turn left is now dealing with yet one more traffic lane. This is a very problematic intersection as it is right now. But that was the decision that we had made previously. Again, south of Washington Street, this curb and gutter down to Robinson, it is located in the ultimate location that would accommodate future widening to the south. But this free intersection, it's going to have stop condition, obviously, and perpetuation of this lighted sidewalk that was installed not too long ago, is a tricky intersection. These are just little traffic arrows to show how the traffic could maneuver on to Wall Street and down to Caroline. Slight bulb out at Caroline, because in this case there'd be a right turn out and a right turn in only configuration. Again, trying to eliminate as many of these left turns as possible. We don't really like that intersection, and this is one of the possible concepts that we wanted to explore. And basically, what this one involves is a one-way roadway, single lane for Washington Street, one-way westbound from Roop Street down to west of the library. And in that case, there would be no crossing movements from Washington Street to the community center. I don't know that we could prohibit the crossing movements westbound, but that would hopefully be the case. But at least you would eliminate the movement, the eastbound movement and the right turn movement out and the left turn movement out of Washington Street. To accommodate that and also to look at minimizing the impact of the parking at the library, one of the things with this widening, we're having to go back in and adjust the parking lot at the library. They are losing a few spaces. That entire parking lot needs to be restriped. It doesn't work very well. But with this layout, we could actually put some diagonal parking in. These are quite a ways from this intersection, so it would not necessarily be a problem. I don't think we have it in the presentation, but we also looked at also providing an option with the driveway at the westerly end of Washington Street at the library, so that eastbound traffic could get into the library complex without having to take this path, which is, again, Wall Street down to Roop Street. And again, in this case, we'd say, all right, even though it's not greatest, we're going to have to allow that left turn movement so people can get out of there and go north. And so in this case, there would be no bulb out. Now, this project right now, it would have to be coordinated with the project that Rob Fellows is working on. The city was successful in getting some grant money for sidewalk improvements between Roop Street and all the way up to Carson Street, I think, wasn't it? So Rob is in the process of doing final design on this roadway at this point. We're going to work with him with whatever configuration comes up so that we don't end up, the city doesn't end up installing brand new curb and gutter that we tear out whenever the street goes forward. But this is basically the recommendation. One alternative is the diagonal stripe, or the parking could actually be on the southerly side of Washington Street instead of the northerly side. So that would be an option we need to explore also. These darker areas could either be landscaped or they could be put down with colored concrete paving, simulated stones, if you will, or colored and stamped concrete, I think is what we've been using for the most part. So that's something that would have to be worked out. The overall parking configuration in the library has a couple options, and what we would suggest is working with the library folks over there to come up with the best layout that we think we'd come out with. But effectively, I think we're going to probably end up slurry sealing, making that parking lot completely black, and then restriping it.
Ken, what's the distance from that driveway there to Roop Street?
If it's a standard block, it's 250 feet.
Okay, because it's something that I've observed over time is that folks, if they're wanting to go down to Stewart Street, turn left and commute. This is just during like afternoon commute hour, or the commute 10 minutes, they'll turn left from William Street onto Roop Street and shoot down Washington to Stewart. And I'm just concerned that if someone is trying to take a leisurely entrance into the library, that might cause a problem. But again, it's only for that 10 minutes during the day. I think that having that driveway down at the very far end of the lot would make much more sense so that you have folks can get in or out rather than being in that one-way movement.
Sure. We actually, under this layout, which there's nothing set in stone on this, by the way, we have a driveway. It's a two-way driveway, basically a mid-block, and then I think this other driveway makes a lot of sense also. One of the things we did at one point, we're thinking, can we put parking in this dead area? And it's too close to the intersection. Someone's going to back out of that diagonal parking, and like I said, this fellow is going to be whooping around the corner, and there you go.
Ken,
yes, ma'am.
Following up on Russ's comments, projecting into the future, at some point we may end up relocating the library and making this property available for some other use, and mm-hmm. it may be a commercial use, and so access is going to be critical to maintaining the value in this property. So I think having that secondary access into the parking lot would be essential. But before we get too far along in spending time and energy designing this alternative, have we had some at least preliminary discussions with the folks who are going to be most impacted by this one-way section of street to determine whether or not there's any major resistance or concern about converting this?
No, we haven't. I think Patrick has talked to the library staff, but as far as talking to the actual property owners that are in that vicinity, I don't believe so.
I would recommend
we would certainly need to do that preemptively. As well as a public meeting on this kind of concept if we're changing from what we had before.
Right. Well, Andy, I guess my concern is, we have a finite of resources in terms of dollars, and rather than spending a lot, I know that Rob Fellows is working on refining this, but rather than wasting staff time, I think we need the benefit of public input, just at the conceptual stage to determine whether it even warrants further study.
Yes, sir. I agree. Anyway, this is one of the alternatives. Again, some advantages, eliminates some of the turning movements. Full movements at Caroline would be a compensation item and should reduce a little bit of the congestion in that area too. But that is a tough intersection. I joked with Rebecca and I said, what you want to do if we go back to the other layout is grab this piece of location and get yourself a little auto towing shop slash body repair facility right there. You can probably make a million. So.
Okay, so what are the statistics in terms of accident data on this intersection? I mean, is it strikingly high?
We'd have to check with the XL.
It would be interesting to find out. I mean, we're making assumptions, but it would be interesting to find out what the accident history actually is.
Yeah, the only one that really sticks in mind is that fatality from a couple of years ago. But
We also had a fatality on South Carson Street, and it's a straight shot.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you just never know. So,
thank you.
Overall cost for phase two, basically these are reflect taking out phase one of the project. I think some of these prices I would hope were a little bit inflated based on some of the bidding we've had. In other words, we lowered some of those down from the 2004 oh my gosh numbers to not quite what we've been seeing lately. But basically about $600,000 for taking all that overhead power between Highway 50 and Beverly and putting it underground, and telephone and cable television also. The roadway, basic roadway improvements, what is that, a 2.4? Water system improvements, sanitary sewer, and storm drain improvements are also very significant. The storm drain improvements actually dropped from the original project because of the storm sewer that we had to put in to support the Stewart Street project. Oh, so that's going to go down even a little bit more. All right. Okay.
Andy, can I ask you, I know Darren's left, he put together the most recent project description report on this phase of the Roop widening project. And Ken's estimate is fairly significantly lower on the sewer expenses.
Yeah, I think those were the older numbers that we had.
Okay, and so the other thing that's missing that's significant are storm drainage improvements. We don't even have a line item in this project update on storm drainage. So. If you could amend that would be great.
When we get to the schedule, I can talk a little bit about the effects of having these larger numbers for utility improvements and how it's going to affect the schedule. So,
right.
Which Ken didn't know about when he put the schedule together. So,
I suspect
it all on here in a couple minutes.
Thanks, sir.
I think these are conservative. Again, right now we're getting 9, 10, 12 bidders coming out for projects that 4 years ago we'd be lucky to get two bidders. And in some cases, and you can remember this, we get one bidder on project, and it's a whole different environment right now. So if the funding's available, which is the tough thing, this is the time to build them. Redesign fees, getting the plans up to current standard specifications. This is the standard 12% number that Carson City likes to put in for their construction management and material testing and inspection fees, and then I'm getting a little risque here, only putting a 5% contingency, but hopefully it's 5% the opposite way. Our schedule, again, what we're trying to do at this point is to define what is to be included within the updated 100% plans and specifications to be submitted to the city. And the principal change, besides just working through some of a lot of the little details that were brought about by some of the work we've done on Stewart Street, as well as some other changes, is the Washington Street intersection. But the intent here is to proceed with those 100% plan specifications, get those to the city, and then at that point, it's going to be up to the city's, your schedule, as far as when you want to actually proceed with the possible construction of this roadway. So this schedule basically, I think, has got us, and I can't hardly see it, but basically we'd be done with 100% plan somewhere at the end of the summer, where in theory you could advertise the project this fall. But I think that's Andy's lead-in. So,
yeah, we have not been able to budget the water, sewer, and storm drain improvements for next fiscal year because of issues with those funds. So it looks like we're going to end up having to budget those for the next fiscal year, so they'd be available in July of 2010. So we would need to delay this project about till putting it out to bid about this time a year from now, such that it can start construction in about June of 2010, so it can be constructed then through the summer. And that's just simply because the water and sewer funds can't support this project along with all the other projects that they have to support. So. we're going to end up having a delay. That's not all bad. In some ways, there are a number of right-of-way issues that have to be addressed as a part of this. And it usually takes us 6 to 9 months or longer, Kim, to deal with all the right-of-way things. These are mostly small takes in comparison to Stewart. It's just little ribbons of property, but they, as Ken mentioned, there are some problems as a result of that that we're creating for some of the
Short time right-of-way for right-of-way probably is not enough there. So.
Right, right. So we think that it'll take longer. We're in the process of already starting the right-of-way work now. But I think it'll take us a little longer. So having a little bit longer time to put this together, I think, will be helpful.
Well, it'll also give us a chance to see how the completion of the next phase of the freeway to Fairview, how it impacts circulation patterns within Carson City. I mean, sure. Obviously, one of our concerns was having additional avenues for people to travel in the absence of a completed bypass. But, you know, with the completion of the bypass to Fairview in June, right? Opening in June?
August is the last word from
August, Anna. Okay. Opening in August.
I heard August 1st, which is really close to July.
Okay. Hear a vote for September. Okay. Anyway, it'll give us an opportunity, I think, to see how the traffic patterns change and whether or not there's a diminishment in the use of Roof Street as a result of the opening of the second or the next phase of the freeway. Anyway, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. And I presume that, you know, given RTC's budgetary constraints, that we won't be able to lend the money to the utilities to move this project forward. Okay.
Ken, what provisions are you making for the bus stops in the reconstruction of the road?
Basically, I do whatever Patrick commands me to do. We've actually talked about that. And, Rebecca, you might have a little bit more specific detail on that as far as putting those bus stops in.
Not yet. We're still looking at some locations northbound, like we talked about.
are they pullouts?
That's what we're looking at to see where we could fit them in.
If I may, there's actually northbound at the community center side, right outside here. We actually have not too bad of a spot right now, right at the beginning of the northbound, eastbound right turn lane. It's southbound on the library side that's, I believe, a little more problematic there and where we've actually gotten more requests for it. But it also comes down to, depending on the traffic volume, do we want to have a pullout where the bus gets out of the traffic lane and then has to try to merge back in the traffic depending on the traffic volumes, or do we want to let them stay in the lane so that they can continue onward while the other lane is still available for traffic to flow. So we've brought it up and started discussing it already.
Okay, Ken, is that it?
Unless you'd like to beat me up about any whoop-de-doos anymore. So.
No, listen, I think that's a wonderful, wonderfully technical term.
I like that term. That's an engineering term.
That's right. Any other questions of Ken from members of the commission? All right, if not, we'll open up. Yes, Charles.
I wanted to ask Andy. I assume with the water, sewer, money, and so on, that's all obligated such that priorities can be changed to maybe give Roop Street a little higher priority. In case, again, we get, I mean, all of this is timing, obviously. And as we're pointing out, we're in an era of capturing some good bidding
right
here. And I'm just wondering, do we have any flexibility on your side of the house?
There is some, depending on what happens with the stimulus package. If we get some monies that are freed up for some of the projects that were already ready to dig projects, basically, for water or sewer, that may free up some monies that would allow us to move forward with these. But we won't know about those. In fact, we have a meeting a couple weeks, I think, and related to the water and sewer monies that the state's going to allocate. We anticipate we're going to get some water money. We haven't heard on sewer yet. So that, and it also has to do with RTC monies going forward and where we end up with NDOT and negotiations with them as well. There's a lot of things kind of floating along here that maybe give us some flexibility to advance the project. And, yeah, I think if we could figure out a way to advance the project to take advantage of the marketplace right now, we certainly would want to do that.
Andy, is there any opportunity to break this into further phases? I mean, taking it from Beverly to East William, for example, that one stretch, maybe I mean, obviously, we would lose some economies of scale, but, I mean, if we're really constrained in terms of funding, I mean, maybe we could break it up.
Well, it was something we could look at. We hadn't thought about making it even smaller, but that's certainly a possibility we could look at.
Yeah, okay. There's some options there. You'd probably look at, say,
Beverly to William.
Yeah, because you pretty much need to construct all the way down to William Street, because otherwise the gravity utilities are not going to function that well.
Right, okay. Okay. As long as we have that as an option. Any other questions or comments by members of the commission? Okay. Patrick, would you mind turning up the lights? Thank you. Go ahead and open it up for a public comment. Thank you, Ken, very much. Thank you, Rebecca. Yes, please, Dan.
Good evening, commissioners. My name's Dan Allison, and I'm a citizen of Carson City. And you've seen me come here with wearing other hats, but tonight I'm wearing my bicycle hat. So I'm simply speaking as a bicyclist. I would ask that the commission reconsider the five-lane configuration between Beverly and Washington Street. And the reason for it is bicycle access. As they stated, the outside lane would only be 12 feet. 14 feet is the minimum requirement under ASHTO for a shareable lane. So at 12 feet, the lane can't be shared safely. That means that you're precluding bicycles from that stretch of Roop Street. Why is that significant? Roop Street is the only street that runs full direction north-south in Carson City. It's the only way to get all the way north and south in Carson. Currently, north of Northridge, things are fine. There's a bicycle lane to College, and then beyond there, the traffic volume drops off. Between Northridge and Winnie is going to be fixed with the community development block grant path being put in. The phase one section is also a block to bicycle traffic, which I think is unfortunate, but it's something that could be corrected over time, and it's a relatively short section to correct. And then from the phase three, Washington South, there are bicycle lanes designed into the project. And from Fifth Street South, there's a bicycle lane or low traffic streets all the way to the south part of town. So Roop and its pieces, as they change names, is the only north-south route in entire part of Carson City, other than, of course, Carson Street, which probably won't ever be a bicycle pathway. All of the other access points terminate at some point. For example, Salomon works well to the south, but then it ends at Long Street. Curry will provide some access. There are streets on the west side of town which have low traffic volumes and are used by bicyclists, but none of them are wide enough to hold bicycle lanes. So I'm really concerned that with this project going forward in the five-lane configuration, it would cut off the main north-south route in Carson City. And that worries me as a bicyclist incredibly. Currently, to get around Carson, you have to zigzag back and forth through town, crossing Carson Street multiple times and waiting for the signal multiple times. Roop Street has the opportunity to solve that problem if bicycle facilities are built into it. And in thinking about why does it need to be five lanes or four travel lanes, I'm not quite sure why it does. Stewart Street will take off some of that load. Looking at it from a northbound perspective, going north, if there's four travel lanes on Roop Street and two travel lanes on Stewart Street, and they funnel down into two travel lanes on Roop Street to the north of Beverly, there's a capacity problem there. You're putting a lot of lanes into a relatively few lanes, and Long Street clearly takes some of that traffic. I don't know how much. I don't have any traffic statistics, but it just seems strange to me that we're funneling so many lanes into what's already a constricted space. So I'm not sure that five lanes make sense or is it really necessary for capacity in that area, at least between Beverly and William Street. So I would just ask you to reconsider the five-lane configuration of it and to help out the bicyclers by having that main north-south route have bicycle facilities on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions? Thank you. Okay. Any other member comment? Yes, Jim.
Dan, I do have a question for you. Following up on a comment that Shelley made a couple of minutes ago, do you have any data on how many bicycle riders are using that stretch of the road?
Currently, absolutely none are because it's unsafe. How many would? No, I honestly don't know. As you're aware, bicycling use is relatively low in Carson City currently, and you can do a chicken and egg thing. Is it low because there aren't good routes, or are there not good routes because they're not needed? I don't know. I do know that it's a continual conversation point with the bicyclists in town about the difficulty of getting north-south, but I don't have any numbers for you on how many do or would use that.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? Do we have bicycle lanes on Stewart Street? Do bicyclists use Stewart Street?
There's no bicycle lanes designated on Stewart Street, but the outside lane was widened out to 14 feet to be a shared lane configuration. So there's, in theory, room for both bicycle and vehicular traffic on Stewart Street. And that was done, we went specifically to that 14-foot outside lane specifically for that reason.
And that same width applies on the Stewart Street extension? I mean, could a bicyclist go
yes.
Stewart go from, and I know it's a zigzag, I'm just trying to think, you know, we're constricted. I mean, go use Stewart Street and then come back down Williams and pick up Roop again. But
Jim.
Yes.
Is Stewart Street?
It's rather convoluted, but yes.
Is Stewart Street going to be 35 miles an hour?
No, it's 25.
So it will not be the same as south of
That's
Highway
correct.
50. And Roop Street will be 25.
25.
So I think if you're a bicycle rider, you'd probably rather be with a 25 crowd, right?
I don't think so.
Well, the other thing, as we mentioned earlier, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the traffic patterns change when the freeway opens at Fairview in terms of diminishing, you know, the traffic on Roop Street. And maybe, you know, we can always re-examine the need for five lanes. Okay. All right. Ken, thank you very much.
You.
Any other comments by members of the public? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. And that was informational only. And we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is an action regarding some engineering services.
That's very
unusual. Well, it's awfully lengthy.
I'll take this one.
I'll leave it for the maker of the motion.
This is a project that's been discussed in general previously. This is the proposed contract with Palmer Engineering to do the engineering design work for the realignment of Snyder. From its current alignment, where it currently is, as it goes west and meets up with Carson Street just south of Clearview Drive, it hits it at a 45-degree angle and is located between what's primarily a bowling facility and Michael Hull RV dealership. As was mentioned in the documentation at the previous meeting, consistent with an agreement signed by the Board of Supervisors, the Redevelopment Authority, and Michael Hull Automotive Group, RTC directed staff to pursue several transportation-related improvements, this being one of them. The purpose of this would be to design the roadway that would allow for the future permitting with NDOT and construction of a realigned Snyder that would align with the current Appian, the Appian Way extension that is currently under construction on the west side of Carson Street. That's a summary of what you have before you, and in case there's a question, there is a representative from Palmer Engineering here that can answer any questions as well.
Okay, well, you know, the question I always ask, you know, we're in difficult economic times, was there, and I understand this is a relatively small contract, unlike the one that we negotiated with, was it Black and Veatch? But was there any, did you do any negotiating with the engineering company?
Yes. Patrick did quite a bit of negotiation.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, and you can say I can personally attest to, and so can Palmer Engineering, frankly.
Is that where those bruises came from on his cheek?
No, there were multiple versions, both in scope and in dollar value to this. So, yes, I can attest to, frankly, months of discussion that took a little while to get to this point.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the extra effort. Okay, would the gentleman from Palmer Engineering like to make any comments?
My name is Mike Stevenson. I've worked on the project with Mark Palmer since the inception. I brought some exhibits that may help explain a little bit as to how we got involved with this project, and I'd like to hand those out to help explain it a little bit, if that's okay. We've been working with Carson Lanes to do the redevelopment of the Carson Lane facility. And these two exhibits will kind of explain that a little better for you.
Thank you.
The site concept is one that was done by George Zabel working with our company for the redevelopment of the Carson Lanes and the Aloha liquor area. And in this concept, you'll see, and we were certainly aware that Apian was in the planning work, so this plan was the ultimate abandonment of Snyder when Apian went in, and just the configuration for new Apian as to how it aligns up with the development for the Carson Lanes project. The colored document was put together working with the property owner and basically to make a determination as to how the property could switch when Snyder's abandoned and when Apian goes in. And we did it this way because there's so many players and so much property involved, it makes it a lot easier to understand how the property can be exchanged and acreages and so on and so forth. The main player, of course, for Carson Lanes is Eugene Berger, and the property to the south is owned by the Harris group. So this kind of explains. Our primary focus was the Carson Lane redevelopment, but as we were working with that, they're pretty well dovetail with the development for Apian, and so that's kind of how this project came about. And then that's the time when we were approached with, I believe, Andy and then even Patrick to put together just a proposal for Apian on the notion that it made sense to try to do that one concurrently with the development for the Carson Lanes.
And it sounds like the plans for the Carson Lanes project are going to move forward fairly quickly.
Yes, it is. We have actually started the phase one development of Carson Lanes, which is just the bowling alley itself. It's removing about a third of the lanes and converting those to retail development now. So that's actually in the works. We expect to submit plans within the week for that phase, and that's the first phase of for the bowling alley itself. What you're looking at, this concept is the ultimate build-out, and of course the colored document is the ultimate exchange of property. When Snyder abandons, Apian goes in, and ultimately when 395 converts back to city property, and that area shaded B would eventually become available for property owner.
No, I'm assuming ultimately we're going to, I mean, our desire is to have a lit intersection at Apian and 395. So this current configuration, the configuration that's depicted on this diagram, on the colored diagram,
this
obviously
is
an interim.
Well, the phase. One you're looking at now is pretty much the full build-out where you would have through traffic, it would be a signalized intersection, left in, left outs. The interim design, the current design, is strictly right in, right out. There are no crossings.
So this is final design.
This is ultimate. Yeah, this
anticipating
is
anticipating that this intersection is signalized. Okay.
The phase we're working on now would not be a signalized intersection. It would just be a right in, right out at Apian.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I think we have a question here, Charles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand, the proposal is to abandon Snyder Avenue at the East Willow intersection. Exactly where from what point is?
I think Oak Street.
It's actually at Oak. Oh, all the way back to Oak. Okay. So East Willow then is, it's going to be dead end then, I take it. where now it goes on to Snyder. Or even that's exactly, that was the point I was going to. Okay, fine, thank you.
Which will hopefully appeal to the adjacent property owners.
Okay. All right. As a part of this, there obviously would be a public process because we have not talked to any of the owners yet other than Mr. Berger at this point. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, you know, it's there's no time like the present, and this obviously is being aired, and somebody who happens to live in that vicinity might be alarmed at the prospect of having Willow become a cul-de-sac or be eliminated. So maybe some preemptive discussions with some of the affected property owners would be wise. Okay, any other questions for Mike? Well, we have him at the mic. Okay, seeing none from the commission, I'll open it up to members of the public. Anyone in the public wish to make a comment regarding this item? All right. Seeing none?
Ready?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Kroll.
I move to determine a contract number 0809-212 as a contract for the services of a professional engineer. The selection plan was made on the basis of the competence and qualifications of the engineer for the type of service to be performed and not on the basis of competitive fees, and therefore not suitable for public bidding pursuant to NRS 625.530, and to approve contract number 0809-212 with Palmer Engineering Group Limited to provide design and construction plans for the realignment of Snyder Avenue through August 10, 2009. For not to exceed cost of $60,875 to be funded from the Snyder Avenue Realignment Construction Project Fund as provided in FY 2008-2009.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. All right. All right, move on to item 6.3, review and approval of RTC streets and transit budgets for fiscal year 2009-2010. Andy?
I'll do this. What you have before you is the budget items, the detailed budgets for all three different funds. I should mention that the RTC and streets funds have seen a decline in revenues of about $1 million experiencing about $7 million in revenues this year compared to about $8 million in revenues last year. So it's fairly significant. We were hoping to see, you know, the return of the gas tax as a result of the, you know, we had the big spike in gasoline prices, and that reduced our gas tax rather dramatically. When it came back down, the revenues did not recover, have not recovered yet. So we have, you know, a fairly large revenue shortfall compared to what we've been seeing. The one, as I mentioned some months ago, the only saving grace is we've also seen the cost of our projects go down rather substantially as well. So. The RTC project or a budget, we have reduced salary and benefit costs. We've reduced the services and supply costs, but we have continued the capital program that was adopted by RTC a couple years ago. And streets, again, the revenues are noted to remain flat. Basically, we're predicting no increases in revenues for next year. We have maintained the current staffing level there, but we've reduced the seasonal staffing. We've reduced our seasonal staffing from, we had been typically $150,000 a year. We reduced it to $50,000 a year.
Andy, can I stop you here? Because I suspect Pete Livermore, Supervisor Livermore, is watching this broadcast, and I know that he was concerned about one of the impacts of reducing our seasonal employees would be that we would no longer be maintaining the planted medians. Is that the case?
We're working on other avenues to maintain medians. We're looking maybe one of the options is looking at privatization, looking at because the market is in a really good position right now to maybe privatize that by having private contracts for maintenance of the medians. We're exploring that right now. That may be an option to reduce our costs over what we had. And we have meetings set up in, I think, in about 2 weeks with Parks after we've explored that to see if that's an option that we can do. We do have the $50,000 in funding that's available if we have to. We obviously don't want to reduce the maintenance of the medians. We're going to find a way to do it. It's just that we may reduce our costs in other ways.
Okay. Well, I think his concern was that we were proposing to shift the burden onto Parks and Rec.
No.
Okay. That's not the case.
No, that is not the case.
Okay. No. All right. I just wanted to
They've taken their hits, you know, through this budgetary shortfall as well. They've reduced staff, and they certainly don't have any more capability to add to their burden without having the resources. So
okay.
We're just exploring other options, other avenues in order to maintain the meetings.
But these cutbacks and the number of seasonal employees, I mean, this cutback is unavoidable. So we'll have to find some other way of maintaining those meetings.
That's right.
Okay.
That's
all right. Thank you.
We've transitioned the costs of slurry and overlays, something we programmed a couple of years ago, to move from streets to RTC, picking up those large capital costs, and this budget accomplishes that in total. This current fiscal year, it's in both budgets. Next fiscal year, it will be only in the RTC budget. In addition, there's a $300,000 transfer of funds from RTC to streets for maintenance, because our maintenance costs with the older infrastructure is continuing to go up. One of the things we talked about a number of years ago when we got the legislation approved is that we can now spend RTC funds on maintenance. The law was changed in the last session, so that is included. The $300,000 per year transfer is included. We anticipate that going forward at this point. And we have limited capital again. Last year, or this current fiscal year, we only had capital of some $43,000 or $50,000 for one small piece of equipment. Next year, we're anticipating just replacement of one dump truck. At some point, that's going to come back to bite us because we're not replacing the equipment as fast as it's wearing out. But that's just the nature of the costs right now. In the transit, we continue the transit fund, general fund subsidy of $300,000. So similar to last year. Previous years, it was $350,000. The last 2 years, we've been able to trim it to $300,000. We do have increased federal funding that has come as a result of the stimulus package that's included in the budget for the transit design and bus replacements, but then we maintain the service levels for transit. So if there's any detailed questions or detailed issues that we want to talk about.
Just one quick question for Patrick. Patrick, with respect to the transit center, I know that has kind of slipped on your list of priorities. You want to expand on that?
And I was going to address this under the items for the next agenda. But at the previous RTC meeting, we brought forth a proposed list of projects to use to expend the stimulus funds. The stimulus funds have certainly been a moving target, to say the least. New things are being found out every day, and the new strings, new everything, and it is new for everyone. And that's one of the reasons why we're having that special Campo meeting, is because we can't move on anything until we have the TIF approved. We believe now that the wisest course of action to move forward is to do most of the things that we had on our list: the preventive maintenance, as you can see here in the budget, the preventive maintenance, the software, the money that we use for the paratransit service, which is really operating, but they let us count as capital. But for the bulk of the remainder of the funds, I'm going to be suggesting to use those funds to buy buses, to go out and buy four or five larger buses. We have provided with you a fleet inventory you'll see later that will show you that we have six buses already that have reached their useful life by miles and or years. And the purchase of those buses will give us four or five buses that have a longer lifespan, and we'll minimize our capital needs for the next several years and minimize our workload at the moment and make sure that we maximize our stimulus funds. It's much more of a sure bet.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay, Andy, what you want to move on through this packet of information? Is there anything in particular you want to draw our attention to?
I think I hit the highlights of it. If there's any specific questions that you have.
Okay. Obviously, we're not anticipating any bond proceeds in the next fiscal year.
Correct.
Right?
You know, we do anticipate going out for bonds probably the year after that. That can be a little bit dependent upon how we deal with our negotiations with NDOT,
which we have meetings set up, by the way, with NDOT coming up here in a few weeks. So there may be some ways to delay doing some bonding if we are able to get some other funding from NDOT at this this point. So
okay.
It'll just be dependent upon those negotiations.
You know, I keep harping on this, and I just want to get this clear in my own mind. We have, and we could probably remove it as a line item here, the Walmart traffic signal, which I think the RTC fund was reimbursed in FY08. That's full reimbursement. It was $210,000, as I recall. Wasn't
right. I think we received all the funds except from, I think, one party at this point from the development. We're still chasing one particular party for
okay,
because
and we're not anticipating collecting that in this next fiscal year.
Well, I think
year.
It's down to about $15,000.
We've minor
received almost
money.
All the funds except for one.
So with respect to, I understand that my understanding is RTC cannot loan money to the city.
Correct.
However, in this instance, we just reflected it really as a journal entry, as a line item in the RTC,
as
a receivable.
That's
a receivable,
correct.
And that's how we will do it in the future if we have to
right.
the cover certain costs like utility costs and
connection. Yeah, the Board of Supervisors has to. It can't be a loan. What it can be is an allocation of funds from one fund to another fund
right.
for projects.
And just as long as we have a way of memorializing it, and we're doing it here as a journal entry, basically as a line item in our
correct.
In our budget. Okay. Okay. Does any member of the commission have any questions regarding the proposed budget? Let's see. So in the year, in our next fiscal year, we have $2.7 million allocated for road construction work.
Correct. That's arrived by process of elimination. All the costs are allocated, and then whatever's left over goes into that construction
right.
account.
Right.
Now, we will have funds left over from this year. We anticipated spending $13 million this year. We're not going to get through all $13 million by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
So that will carry over into fund balance and be added to that amount
okay.
to keep the projects going.
But we'll be able to move forward, obviously, complete the Stewart Street Extension project, our work on Curry Street.
Right.
The next phase of the work.
And we should be able to move forward with several other projects.
And we'll be able to cover, obviously, one of the outstanding obligations we have. And, you know, signals now cost, what, $300,000 plus?
$350,000 maybe.
Is the commitment we made to install, cover the cost up to $250,000 of a signal at Eagle Station Lane.
Correct.
It's part of our agreement with Casino Fandango.
Right.
So
we'll bring back the detailed projects list, and as we call it, the transportation improvement plan for RTC, we will bring that back to you in the early fall after we've done the final negotiations with NDOT. We close out the year, we start the new year, we'll come back to you and reallocate the project costs rather than just budget it all into one construction category. We then allocate all those costs out the project.
Okay. All right. Certainly, go ahead.
On Eagle Station stop traffic signal, my understanding is Carson City here is the RTC is going to pay for that traffic signal upon approval of NDOT, and that there are no NDOT funds necessary for the traffic signal.
That's correct.
And our obligation is capped at $250,000, and Casino Fandango and redevelopment will share any overages, except that the Casino Fandango will receive a credit for any expenditures they make in the way of soft costs, primarily in
right.
terms of design
right.
and so forth.
If I may, just sure. for informational purposes, March, I guess last week, the representatives of Casino Fandango did submit a request to NDOT District 2 they submitted directly to headquarters, I believe, for consideration of approval of that signal. And Carson City staff, myself, submitted a letter of support. So they both went to Director Martinovich, and we have yet to hear back.
Did they meet warrants?
What?
Did they meet warrants?
They made the argument that they met several warrants, and we made statements regarding the fact that the signal had long been envisioned there, and that it would be, in fact, as you indicated, Mr. Mayor, that the financial responsibility would be on. Primarily on the city, and that the NDOT would have no fiscal responsibility.
I received a copy of the letter from the director of NDOT to Fandango, and I also happened to see the director who was wanted to reinforce the fact that NDOT was not being required to pay anything, and second, that it was not NDOT's, you know, that not NDOT's position to come up with the warrants. Their concept was, you know, if you can have your engineer, traffic engineer, certify that there's sufficient warrants, you can do that. Have they done all that?
They hired a firm, Selege Engineers, and Selege Engineers has provided an engineering report substantiating how they've met the warrants, but I had yet to receive any response. I don't know if Fandango did, but we have not, whether or not NDOT concurs with Fandango's engineer's assessment. It was only last week.
But there was an engineer sign off on it.
Yes, Paul Selege, PE, did it under contract to Fandango.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
can I ask just another quick, if I were to ask you, Andy, on this RTC budget, just for my help, I know you went through the highlights of the budget. What would you say are the critical decision points that we should be thinking about when we approve or disapprove this budget or consider this budget?
I mean, the budget, the way RTC sets up, in my mind, the more important document is not really the budget as much as the TIP project, where we allocate the construction funds. Because in this budget, we just allocate all construction funds into one number. But when we do the TIP, we allocate those construction funds then out amongst all the projects. And it seems to me that, I mean, just from a layman's standpoint, I think it's more interesting than looking at, you know, salaries and benefits and service and supply costs, because the most of the monies that are spent by RTC, 90% of them are spent, you know, on the leveraging, trying to get projects out the door, and that's really the hard part for you, is to try to figure out which projects have the most priority and when do they get done in relation to the other things. The service and supply and the salary and benefit costs, while we have been trying to reduce those costs because of the less revenues, they don't change a lot. And you know, it may change $100,000, but in a, you know, a $10 million budget, that's not a lot of money. It's really the project costs that are more interesting.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, what we also don't see in this budget is the carryover. I mean, we have projects underway using money from our previous fiscal year. Until the end of this fiscal year, we won't know what that carryover is.
But
I think what everybody is looking for is looking for the assurance that we have sufficient money to complete the projects that are currently underway.
We do. I mean, based on the $9 million that we borrowed last year, or at the very early this year, along with the revenues that we have sufficient funds to continue the capital program that was embarked upon a couple years ago. We do anticipate additional bonding in the future, you know, to complete the capital program, but right now we're right in the midst of that program using the funds that we have available. We're a little concerned that the revenues are you know, less than they have been. That's going to affect some projects at the tail end of the program. It may be that we have to borrow another $1 million, or we have to look at other ways, or not do a project or something at the end of the program. But that's where it'll end up being.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Andy, the revenues from 09 to 10 are flat. And that doesn't, if I'm not mistaken, that doesn't necessarily follow what the state's looking at.
Right. They're showing an increase in revenues this point. We take a little more conservative nature and predict them as flat and try to live within those means. If they do come in a little higher, we've got a little bit more money to spend on some projects, basically, is what it'll do. It'll carry into the next year.
Okay, but you've been studying what the state has been showing. Thank you.
Yeah.
And this is a little off topic, but I noticed when I was going back and looking at our TIP that the Sonoma Street project, Carson to Curry, that has been altered now. It's just a driveway, right? We're not cutting it all the way through
That's
to Curry.
Right.
So
that was an allocation of like $700,000. It's going to be much,
right,
much less than,
right,
that at this point.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions for Andy? All right. Any questions or comments by members of the public on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the commission. Would somebody care to make a motion?
I move to approve the fiscal year 2009-2010 budgets for RTC Streets Transit and forward to the Board of Supervisors for inclusion in the city budget.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. All right. Moving on to item H1, status of safe routes to school application. Patrick?
This is simply put here to inform you that the group that was asked to prioritize and to select the projects for funding for the Safe Routes to School program met on the 19th, and I'm happy to report that the two parallel applications from the school district and from Carson City Public Works developed by our staff, both were selected to receive all requested funding. It now has to be signed by the NDOT director, but I'm very confident, as the motion was made by her assistant director, Kent Cooper. Thank you to Kent Cooper. And we very much look forward to getting to the point where we can access these funds and make the improvements that are listed on the attached page from the Public Works side, and for Dan Allison, who receives kudos for the school district side, for the school district to expend the over $200,000 that they will be awarded as well.
Okay, Patrick, thanks. Dan, would you like to make any comments?
Dan Allison, in this case, wearing my hat as the Safe Routes to School Coordinator for Carson City. I would just like to say that it's been a pleasure working with Patrick and Daniel on staff to develop the grant applications and to figure out the details of what we want to accomplish. It's really been a pleasure on the part of everybody.
Especially gratifying when they actually award some money as a result of your effort. Thank you, Dan. Commissioner Carpenter, where's that? Oh, I'm sorry, Charles.
Patrick, is it appropriate now to mention about the meeting with the principal of Eagle Valley? I think
you were there.
Because that ties that ties in with what Dan is saying. No, go ahead, please.
No, you go ahead. You were at that meeting, and say what you wish.
Okay, well, very, very quickly, because I know we're carrying on a little longer, but Patrick and I did meet for well over an hour with the principal of Eagle Valley, and there's been a concern by RTC for a long period of time about, again, getting the students from Eagle Valley, primarily north, although not all, home safe. And there have been a number of problems about cutting across private property over onto Fairview, then Edmonds, and problems literally blocking Hell's Bells during, especially going home. And I think that was an excellent meeting. I think all three of us had so much to offer. We were literally all talking at the same time. But I thought it was an exceedingly got a lot of good ideas from the principal, and I'm sure she's talked with Dan and the other security gentlemen there who also have all of these exact same concerns about getting the students home safely. So I think with that, Patrick's got some good ideas on how to solve some existing problems.
Okay, thank you, Charles. All right, moving on to the next item, item H2. Status of Jack Fleet. Patrick?
This was just provided because we want you to be aware of what vehicles we have. We did finally receive those two vehicles that have both inside and outside advertising facilities on them and other improvements. And so we wanted you to get an update on what we have here, but also to provide the opportunity, as I mentioned, to show that we actually I said six previously. I said it incorrectly. We actually have seven vehicles that have reached their limit either on miles and or years, and we continue to drive those, but we do have a need to acquire additional vehicles and dispose of our older ones, as we should be doing on a regular basis.
I'm going to anticipate what Commissioner Carpenter might ask, and that is, now that we have the ability to advertise, are we going to actually recruit some advertisers?
Well, first we were going to get them registered and have license plates and paint them and put radios on them and on-spot chains and onboard cameras and GPS. And then we are going to begin, you know, this foray into advertising by working with a local sign shop to produce signs that will go on the side to make sure we get the size, printing, everything right. And we will begin with PSAs
because we want to make sure that anything we put on there doesn't prematurely fade or have any other difficulties. So we will be happy to do some public service type things for the DARE program or the library or the Railroad Museum, as requested by Mr. Barton. And then once we make sure that's all up to queue, then we will recruit advertising.
So what are the time frames, Patrick?
It may be, it'll be next month before the buses are on the street, and it'll probably be about a total of three before we actually start soliciting advertisement.
Okay, and how do we propose to do that, on our website and by word of mouth?
By first of all following all city, state, and federal laws.
details.
Keith's got a new project. It's one, there are laws to follow when you buy things, there are laws to follow when you sell things, and they're additional and not normal rules that the city has to follow, because we have to follow the FTA rules that Joel and I are about to certify that we follow. So we're going to first follow those rules, and then we will work with purchasing and contracts as far as the method of advertisement.
I understand that the law firm of Kummer and Kemper might be interested in advertising on one of our jack buses. All right. And Manhart Engineering, absolutely.
And I would think some of our other partners, such as Michael Hull, Dick Campani, and
Casino
Fandango, I think there are our partners we should talk to post-haste.
And others have already approached us previously, like the hospital and the college. So,
terrific. Great. Okay.
Not to belabor the point, but years ago I was in, I had an opportunity to review a proposal to put video advertising inside buses. Kind of a novel idea where you put, put a DVD in there, and you can actually sell space inside that is kind of more or less real time. Something to think about. I mean, I don't know, if just it's more flashy than putting the signs up on the side, but think about it.
I love it.
No, do you have the information? Can you pass it on to Patrick?
Sure.
Okay, all right. Listen, capitalism at its finest. Okay. Any other comments regarding this item? All right. Any comments from members of the public? Seeing none, we'll move on to item H3, which is our street operations activity report. Does any member of the commission have any comments or questions? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to item H4, project status report. Has everyone had a chance to review the, I guess these are now being produced by Darren, updated. Okay. And we will update the Roop Street widening project as it relates to drainage improvements. Okay. And as it relates to the estimates that we now have in hand from Ken Dorr. All right. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open it to public comment. Dan, sure, this is your last chance to get some FaceTime on television. Okay. With that, we'll move on to item H5, future agenda items. Patrick.
And just to remind us once again, our next meeting will be a special meeting on Friday, April 24th at noon at this same location. And the two items that we have that we're certain of are the award of the Curry Street reconstruction project, which we've already had the pre-bid conference for, and it was very well attended. I counted 21 non-staff people in the room. And then I'll have an updated list of proposed transit projects for stimulus funding as well.
Terrific. You know, it was mentioned earlier in the evening, and I don't suggest that we clutter our agenda on April 24th, but maybe in May at our next RTC meeting, you could advise the commission as to what changes have occurred to the ADA requirements. Ken was the acronym has changed.
To be the only one that knows.
I'm assuming it's more than just the acronym that's changed, but some of the requirements have also changed as they apply to street improvement projects.
The thing I learned is that it's going to be much easier for plaintiffs to prevail in court.
Oh, great. Okay.
Right.
Well, we need to be mindful of what those changes are. So if you could provide us with a list of those changes at the next meeting, Patrick, that would
cue,
be great.
Joel.
Okay. Does any member of the commission wish to request a future item on the May agenda? All right, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Moved.
Seconded.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
To discuss litigation or potential litigation.
Oh, yes.
Okay, all right. That wasn't on my agenda. But
no, it's on the back.